A Perfect Marriage. Who would want to watch that?
This is my house, Alice. M.Y. House. My house.
How's AC?
It's broken. You're right. Call the guy. I'm sorry.
Because I ain't getting your dinner on the table until you take back what you said!
There's marriage, and then there's marriage on screen. The couples who have paraded themselves through Hollywood and across our TV screens are a chronicle of our beliefs about marriage, our dissatisfactions, and aspirations.
Nikki?
What?
You asleep?
Yes.
Good. I want to talk to you.
Nick and Nora there, cuddly, glamorous, crime solvers of the Thin Man series. Now, they had it made, but nothing compared to the blowtorch heat of this couple.
You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and... Hello.
Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart into Have and Have Not. They got married in real life. Who wouldn't after that scene? But there are some bumps along the way for the Hollywood marriage.
In fact, he was sort of a flop. A great, big, fat flop.
Stop it, Mother.
I hope that was an empty bottle, George. You can't afford to waste good liquor. Not on your salary. Not on an associate professor's salary.
Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton in Edward Albee's deliciously barbaric Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, about a couple clearly not registered at Crate and Barrel. Janine Basinger's book, I Do and I Don't, A History of Marriage in the Movies, is a deeper look at all this. She's a professor of film studies at Wesleyan University who says her own marriage is a bit Hollywood wacky, even though she and Mr. Basinger are solid as a rock.
I'm 45 years married, and as I said, to the same guy, not 45 years of marriage to several guys. So people could not believe it when my husband and I got married. They said, this is the mismatch from hell. And I said, well, really, what do they know?
You're an expert. And let's talk about in I Do and I Don't, how in the silent era, we really are seeing an embodiment or an exploration of marriage that really takes into account all of the taboos that were going on at the time in American culture.
Yes, it was the perfect venue for the movies to both have their cake and eat it too, as it were. You could tell a story about a marriage that reaffirmed all of society's values by showing that if you did all the things that society said were naughty, that, you know, you would have to come around to the other point of view in the end. The general tradition of the story was the reaffirmation of the social unit of marriage as what you should do and the proper way to live your life, the proper way to be having sex. And men and women had specific roles assigned, and those were defined in particular ways. And so the movies challenge those by having a plot that upsets it in some way, and then in the end it reaffirms the old values.
Now, I'm a little younger than you, not much, but I'm a little younger than you.
I'm sure a lot.
In the sense that when I think of marriage movies, you know, I'm of an age where I think of like Ordinary People or Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, definitely about marriages where the gloves have completely come off. What is a movie that gets us intermediate from the silent era to those movies, which are just candid almost to a fault?
Well, you do have some very realistic marriage movies from the silent time forward. But what I think of as a transition movie that has both the escape and the glamour and the day-to-day domesticity is a movie called Made for Each Other with Jimmy Stewart and Carol Lombard.
Huh.
They have the glamour and they have the humor, but yet the story is about a couple who marry in haste, and when they take up their domestic life, it's just one problem after another for them.
Johnny, you fool. What difference does it make whether you get a raise or a partnership or anything?
Oh, Jane, I'll let you down. I'll always let you down. I'm no good, Jane.
And they really come to the end of their senses and decide this just won't work. And then, of course, a very sort of false happy ending is fixed onto it, in which all of a sudden everything goes right.
What do you make of the Hepburn and Tracy movies in the sense that they're kind of meta in that these two are able to have a marriage on screen that they were never able to have off screen?
Hepburn and Tracy are a really interesting pair because they're famously unmarried. You know, off screen, they represent non-married. But on screen, they didn't always play married. But they somehow seem to be, to people, a perfect example of a married couple, a balance between them. He's kind of earthy and solid, and she's kind of hoity-toity and erratic.
We've had our little differences, and I've always tried to see your point of view. But this time you got me stumped, baby.
You haven't tried to see my point of view. You haven't even any respect for my...
There we go. Here we go again.
But yet, when you put them together, he brings out the best in her, and she brings out the best in him. And it's an interesting thing that those two people would not necessarily, if you were looking at them before they became Hepburn and Tracy, two people you would think would make a great romantic couple on screen. But they did. And part of that is because it was authentic between them. But they are famous for not being married off screen, which is an interesting wrinkle on their marriage movies.
So the movies turn out to be matchmakers in history as well as being commentators on marriage itself. That's so fascinating.
Oh, yes. Many a match that didn't go anywhere, by the way. If anything, movies were making too many matches, some of which might not have exactly been sanctified. But there's nothing like being on a set out in Bolivia for 9 months, you know, when there's nobody there but you and your leading man,
and
you're kissing every day, you know?
We're talking to Janine Basinger, author of I Do and I Don't, A History of Marriage at the Movies. She's a professor of film studies at Wesleyan University. Have you been doing that for how long now?
I think forever. I've been at Wesleyan one way or another since 1960, and I've been teaching film there since 1969.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's a long time. So you see, I am older than you.
Well, that's totally fine. But the reason I ask is, how many times at the Oscars are you rooting for former students?
Well, this year is very special because there's a film in contention for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, Best Screenplay, for really significant Oscars, from a group of people who have absolutely done it their way. They went on their own into the bottom of Louisiana and made a movie they wanted to make it on their own terms. They're just a wonderful example of intelligence, talent, passion, all the good things that film needs to have, and I'm so happy for them. And I'm talking about the film Beasts of the Southern Wild.
So is Ben Zeitlin going to thank you if he gets the Oscar?
Well, Ben Zeitlin doesn't need to thank anyone. He is a talent born. You know, it's nice to be a teacher and to point and say, that was mine, you know. But frankly, you don't take credit for the kind of talent that Ben Zeitlin was born with. He was born with it in his soul.
All right. Well, thanks so much. It's been great speaking with you.
Always fun to talk with you, and thanks for having me.
Janine Basinger, author of I Do and I Don't, A History of Marriage at the Movies, and a professor of film studies at Wesleyan University, and someone who will be on Pins and Needles on Oscar night.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.